The Rockets Chop Shop is your one-stop shop for all your basketball needs, for highlights, analysis, podcasts. We do it all here at The Rockets Chop Shop. Make sure you hit the like button on the videos that you watch if you enjoy them. Hit the subscribe button to get notifications from all the great drops that we have on the channel. Also, you can visit the Chop Shop merch store and get you some of the swaggiest gear in the Houston Rockets kingdom. And if you want, you know, you can always support the channel directly through donations. And if you want, you can support us through our partnerships with our sponsors. The Rockets Chop Shop is made by fans, for fans, and we're going to keep rocking and keep dropping that heat. You deserve from me. This is something I know. So what is up, Chop Shop gang? We have made it through another off season, and man, it felt like forever, right? So we actually are on the eve of seeing real basketball being played by the Houston Rockets, the 23-24 Houston Rockets, the new look Rockets. Everybody's excited. We're ready to go. It's been a long off season, a long 3 years, but you made it. You made it through Steven Silas, you made it through Kyrie Thomas and Spalding and all these random players that we had to go through these past 3 years. We made it through Gary Bird fever, and we made it through all these just events, Christian Wood, Kevin Porter Jr., all of that. And we're here. We're here where we have a new team, a new coach. We have new players, new draft picks, a new culture. And even some of the players that have made it through from the past to make it to the current team, they are here in the new regime. So there's a lot of unanswered questions that the Rockets have this coming season, and they're going to be answered. They're going to be answered. We're going to be able to see it. No more speculation. This is just real deal. Like, we are here. So exciting times for Houston Rockets fans. And just wanted to, you know, hook y'all up with a little preseason guide. So it's obviously the preseason, but it's before the season as well. So I wanted to give you guys my top five things that the Rockets are going to need to do and tighten up on for this season to be a success. I want you guys to just follow along with me. It's going to go in different directions, but I'm going to give you my top five things the Rockets need to do. Because if they do these things, then the play-in playoffs are in the cards. If they struggle with these things, then we may have to put that off for another season. Regardless, overall, I think we're going to have a better season, because you can't go anywhere from the bottom but up, right? You can't go anywhere. You know, we've as low as we can, but we can only go up from here. So check it out. Let me know what y'all think. So transition play for the Houston Rockets was atrocious, right? These past 3 years, we literally broke the record for having the worst transition defense in NBA history. I think this was 2 years ago, then backdoored and broke it again. This past season, I don't think it was as bad as it was 2 years ago, but this is definitely going to be a huge marker for the Rockets. And if you look at their transition of points per possession from last season, they rank offensively 29th out of 30th teams, and defensively 30 out of 30. So we were at the bottom of the barrel on both offense and defensive transition. What has plagued the team over the past few years that we've had? We haven't had a point guard, right? So you don't have a point guard. A lot of times it doesn't really help in getting guys, especially on the offensive transition, getting in their lanes. And, you know, some of that could be on the coach. A point guard isn't going to tell the players where to fill the lanes, who's the person that's going to be kind of hanging back, being that trailer, who's, you know, who goes where. That's all really coaching. And if it is being coached by the players and they're not doing it, then that's the coach not really emphasizing what he's supposed to do. So you look at that aspect of the game for the Rockets now, obviously with Ime really focusing on that. He spoke on both transition offense and defense. And defensively for transition, the Rockets rank, you know, the highest in the NBA for percent of time in transition defense. And you know why? That's because we're missing a lot of shots. So it kind of one feeds the other. Bad offense, bad team, making tough shots, missing tough shots leads to fast breaks for other teams. Then you compile the fact that they were so bad in transition. So you're putting yourself in a position to be unsuccessful by putting yourself in a position to basically have to see a lot of your weaknesses. And that was something that was a theme for the Rockets. You guys heard me over and over talk about the pick and roll frequency that the team would run without, once again, a point guard. And we were one of the highest frequency pick and roll teams at the same time having the lowest points per possession in the NBA. Those two things don't add up for me. So that was always funny business with the Rockets. But transition defense is going to be a big deal. That's going to be fed by their overall half court defense. It's going to be fed from that aspect. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And on the offensive side is, can guys follow what the coach tells him? If your job is to fill the corners, fill the corners. If your job is to attack the paint, attack the paint. If you attack the paint, are you going to kick it out to the guys in the corners that are filling? If your job is to be a trail five or a trail four, are you going to trail properly? What is their philosophy on transition? We're going to see all this as the games unravel. I know for Steven Silas, he really valued spacing and transition and attacking mismatches. Our guys just never executed that. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, I know he had a philosophy and a plan. It just never really, the rubber never hit the road. So that's on him. You're the boss, bro. So transition is going to be huge for the Houston Rockets this season. If they can get their transition defense in line and not be like the worst in NBA history, that alone is worth a couple of wins, because you're in so many transition defensive plays and teams are scoring on you at ease, at will in transition, that it really does, doesn't help your half court defense. So you just have that much more to overcome. If you can mitigate, that's low hanging fruit. That's just a basketball 101 assignment. Be where you're supposed to be, effort, hustle, and all of those things that we know Ime Udoka is going to demand from this team. So that's going to be incredibly key for this coming season. So for the Rockets this year, I'm going to be really, really curious about their rotations. How are those rotations going to look, right? How are these rotations going to look? Because to me, that's going to determine a lot of their, not only success early on in the season, but as the season progresses, what does that turn into? We've added Fred, we've added Dylan, we've added Jeff Green, we've added Reggie Bullock. A lot of new names. You add the rookies in with Amen and Cam Whitmore. You have the guys coming back. What are those rotations going to look like? So I'm going to show you guys my rotation. So obviously, this is going to be the starting rotation that I think everybody is in agreement with this, right? Fred at the point guard, Jalen at the two, Dylan Brooks at the three, Jabari Smith Jr. at the four, and Alperen Şengün at the five. But here's what has changed for me since Kevin Porter has been banished from the team, right? Amen Thompson is going to get a lot more opportunities to be able to show what he can do with the ball in his hand as a point guard. So I think he's going to come in and back up Fred VanVleet. And I think that over training camp, we got to see him get a lot of reps in that role of backup point guard. I think that is going to be very, very valuable for him to get these reps on a team that's trying to win, because that's a different approach and a different kind of setting that our rookies are used to being in. And this is one of the things that I think Amen has a better start to. He's going to have a better start to his career as an NBA player than Jalen or Şengün or Tari or Jabari had, because he's going to be in structure. He's going to be in organization. He's going to be in a competent milieu that's going to help him as a basketball player with his talent. When you pair a talented, you know, all world, God gifted players with that structure early on, it breeds early success for them. You think all the great players that win chips, they come in trying to win. It's very rare that you have a players that are on a tanking team that has tanked for multiple years and they are actually playing on those teams and experience that kind of defeat over and over again that make it out to the other side of the tracks. Might be a few. You can count them on one hand. But most of these guys, they come in, even though their teams might be losing early, but the goal is always to win. And I think for Amen, that's going to be big for him. Those backup point guard minutes are going to be very, very important for the Rockets. I love the addition of Reggie Bullock. I know I never really had a chance to really touch on that during, you know, everything was happening so much and so fast with the Rockets, with all the news coming out. I love the addition of Reggie because I think, you know, he's a perfect pairing in that second unit with Amen Thompson. Obviously, Amen is, we've seen the step back 3-point shot, but, you know, that's not going to be his bread and butter. Reggie giving him that spacing, I think, is going to be important for them. And I think him at the two is going to be great. Tari Eason at the three. And I think I was even tempted to put Tari at the two and Reggie at the three, because the way the Rockets are using Tari is like he's going to be a secondary ball handler. And I'm all for that. I think he has that in his game. He's a hooper. So why not try to maximize that aspect of his game by putting the ball in his hands and letting him be that guy that's going to be able to set the table like he was doing in summer league, like he was doing in training camp. And for every player on the team, this is something that's going to be different from what we're used to, not only for Steven Silas, as Rockets fans, but even Mike D'Antoni. Ime Udoka's offense is really, really diverse, right? There was a question that came up about Jalen being a ball handler and his ability to, you know, to be off ball, on ball. And Ime basically said, you know, it's equal opportunity on this offense. It's not really about one player where Jalen has to get those reps. Where that stuff really matters is going to be in closing time, crunch time, where at the end of games, y'all know my philosophy, damn the play, damn the defense, give that guy the ball. 1-4 flat, let's clear it out, right? Go cook. We ran that damn near 48 minutes for the Rockets last year. Go cook. You can't win a lot of games with go cook. Go cook is great for the playoffs, right? Fourth quarter, 5 minutes left. Okay, we already know what you're going to run. Let's just see, is my guy better than yours? This is where the superstardoms of players come in. This is where the brilliance of these type of players. This is why LeBron James needed Kyrie Irving to win that chip. Those type of players that are able to get their shots off in high leverage moments using their God-given abilities, those are the players that you want with the ball in their hands late. But for the regular season, you want your offense to be diversified so you're able to keep teams on their toes. When you get too predictable, it's really, really hard to have an efficient offense. So I think that, you know, for the Rockets, whether Jalen gets on ball, off ball, it doesn't matter. He needs to be a all-around player, like he has said, like Coach Udoka has said. And I think that's going to lend to his success as an NBA player and his perception around the league as a guy that can add to winning. And I think for him, that's really going to be the biggest change. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. Hearing a lot of great stuff about Jayshon Tate coming out of camp. He has really solidified to me himself in the second unit. If you guys remember, I did a video with talking about Kelly Eco's lineups. I had him in the third string, kind of working that second, third string, 3, 4, 5 kind of amalgam of roles and positions because he's so versatile. But I think now, given his defensive versatility, his ability to play make, his ability to post up and attack and cut, I think Coach Udoka is going to love him. Tate is a coach's pet. So I can't see him not being on the floor. So I think he's going to get the nod at either the 3 or the 4 or 5, depending on the lineups they're running on the second unit. And then I've been hearing a lot of great stuff about Jeff Green from guys that are there in training camp. So I think Jeff is going to be able to take that. To me, he probably starts out as the second unit 5 over Londale, because Londale was injured too. Londale was injured. Jacques was injured. So it's only fair. Jeff's been putting in the work. He's a vet. He can do multiple things. Jeff can space the floor. He can switch. He can probably play the 3, the 4, and the 5. So I think Udoka is really going to lean on his vets, because I know coaches that are trying to win, they trust vets. That's just how it is. So that's kind of the second unit there. Then I think between Cam Whitmore and Jacques Londale, those are going to be my third stringers. I think Cam is going to get some 2. I think Cam is going to get some 3. And I think Cam is going to get some 4 because he has the body for it. And I think for me with Cam Whitmore, the one thing that I really want to see from him, and I have this discussion with my friend Mike on Twitter, it's not that he's not talented. Cam is an incredibly talented player. The thing with Cam Whitmore that he has to be able to separate himself from everybody else is going to be dealing with how do you get on the court? Because his biggest gift right now is offense, right? We have so many talented offensive players that do other things way better than him that's not going to be enough to overcome his deficiencies as a rookie. He's one of the youngest players in the league. And so he's going to suck on defense. He's going to have, bad rotations, all those things that coaches hate that are going to force him to get off the floor. But what do you do to keep yourself on the floor? And I think for him, it's going to be simple, right? Are you going to hustle, run in transition, and hit your shots? That's pretty much it. The hustle, that's on offense and defense. He's not going to be a lockdown defender to start. Even Jabari coming out of college was branded as one of the best defenders in a generation. And we saw he struggled, especially in the team concept of defense. He struggled against certain body types on one-on-one, but overall, where do you need to be on the court? Do I need to rotate now? If you're the low man, are you there to help? Who's rotating off of you? Do you trust your guys? All those things rookies struggle on, that's across the board. We'll just let that be. But for Cam, hit your shots. That means take your catch and shoot threes, because Ime Udoka loves catch and shoots. That means he can't take rhythm dribble shots. He has to get that out of his game to play in this offense. You got to just be able to take a shot when it's there, because when you dribble to try to catch a rhythm, because I know he's a rhythm shooter, especially off the dribbles, it kind of messes up the whole philosophy of Coach Udoka, and we'll talk about that too. So for Cam, hit your shots, run in transition, run, hustle. and hustle. Just hustle. Just play hard. Be that KJ Martin that shoots better role. And KJ was a very important part of the team. Even though we sucked, he did a lot of great things very well. Cam needs to find that niche. And then as time goes on and these contracts get worked out, when his time is up, that's when he's going to get the opportunity to showcase that he is a star and he has that in his card. So I'm looking for big things from him, especially in the preseason when he gets a lot of time to show what he got. Because I know the coaches are watching him. With KPJ being gone, his shooting is going to give him a little more oomph getting into the lineup. So I'm looking out for that. And for Jock, as Jock is getting healthy and really fitting in where he fits, right? They're going to lean towards Şengün heavily. They're going to look at Jeff Green as a champion, as a guy that's been there, done that. Jock is going to be very important. I think our centers are the weakest position as a group that we have right now because of lack of versatility. We still need that other type of body type, in my opinion, to be able to give Şengün some breaks and give our team a different look that we don't have right now. But as a whole, they have to just work together collectively and complement each other. And I think Jock just has to get in where he fits in. And I think Jock is going to find a niche as the season goes along. He gets healthy. I think he'll find a role. May even creep into that second unit at some point when he starts showing what he can do. But at the end of the day, I don't think Jeff Green is going to do anything to hurt the team. So, you know, that's going to be very important. Our lineups and how these guys play, who gets the minutes, it's going to be determined. Like the Zach Lowe article said, for Coach Udoka, if you don't play defense, you don't play. So that's really going to be big for them. And that's going to lead us to some of our other points. So for the Rockets, their offensive philosophy coming into this season is going to be incredibly different than it was last season. It's going to be so, I think you guys are going to be really shocked at just the difference in style and play. And I alluded to it earlier regarding the Jalen quote about, the question about him being on ball, off ball. Everybody's on ball, off ball, right? Everybody's on ball, off ball. Everybody has an opportunity to be a ball handler. Everybody has an opportunity to be a spacer. Everybody has an opportunity to cut. Everybody's going to have opportunities to set screens, off ball screens, on ball screens. It's a lot of, like I said, equal opportunity for these guys. And it's a change. And I think for the Rockets, for our players that have been here, this is going to be a huge test for them in adjusting. And I'll talk about that down the line. But, I wanted to just show you guys, just to re-illustrate some of what Udoka did in Boston and showing some of their strengths and what I think that is how it's going to translate to the Rockets. So if you look at how the Celtics offensive ranks under Coach Udoka, they were number one in that year. This was the 21-22 season where he coached them to the finals. In spot up threes, in frequency, they ranked number one. Off screens, they were fourth in the NBA in getting shots off screens. They ranked seventh in isolation. And I think just to stop there, those top three players, those are the top three play types. So spot ups, off screens, and isolations, right? And they kind of feed each other. And the way it really would go is that the isolations and the off screens would generate the spot ups for them and those catch and shoots that you want to see. A lot of times this offense gives you the ability to be able to isolate one on one when you get mismatched. They hunt mismatches using their offensive flow. Once they get, for example, a lot of times Al Horford would set a screen, and depending on what the other teams did, they took whatever the defense gave them. If you're going to concede giving Al a smaller player on a switch to try to, with Jason Tatum, then Al is going to post him up. And if you try to double that post, he kicks it out. Pass, 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 spot up three, catch and shoot three, etc. Same thing, you get a Jason Tatum. Let's say he switches out and there's a slower player, a smaller player that wants to come out, switch on him or somehow gets a mismatch. Then what you get is isolation into the paint where either Jason scores or he kicks it out for a three to a catch and shoot or a spot up shooter. So you can see why they rank so much in this. And it's really about taking advantage of the defense. Their players were equipped to do that, but they weren't the best at that, right? Jaylen Brown, as good as he is as a player, really, really is not a great one-on-one isolation player because he can't dribble, right? He has struggles dribbling, but he was still effective because of his size getting in the paint. That's why it was important for some of our players to really get their strength up with Jabari and Jaylen, being able to attack defenses to get in the paint. I think especially for Jaylen, who is a paint touch god right now, he just needs to be able to pass it out. And I think that was the thing I talked about in my video. His passes on drives was in the low 20s, needs to get that up to the 30s, especially in this offense, really going to be key for him. Let's look at some of their other ranks. Pick and roll, they rank 19th in the NBA, not a high pick and roll team. They don't do a lot of, you know, crazy pick and rolls like the Rockets of the past 3 years were top five in pick and roll every single season. That's going to change. And that's going to change the relationship between Şengün and the guards, right? Because a lot of the action Şengün is going to get, he is going to get roll action, but he's also going to get a lot of pick and pop. So that's going to go into his shooting. He's going to get the same advantages that Al Horford gets, which is for him the ability to post up players. That's where he's going to generate his post ups from. You saw a little bit of it in training camp when they were doing certain things and Şengün would get a mismatch and just body the smaller player and score. So these are what they're going to generate. All of that is in effect to generate open threes for your teammates. The broad philosophy offensively is going to be drive, kick, and pass from good shot to better shot. And then 3-point attempts, they on catch and shoot, they ranked 8th. 3-point attempts, they ranked 9th. And here's the thing that I want you guys to really emphasize on. This is something I found interesting. On 3-point percentage, the Celtics that year, this is the team that went to the finals, ranked middle of the NBA, very average, 14th. Out of the 30 teams in the NBA. And if you look at the shooting from that 21-22 Celtics team in their starting five, 32% for Marcus Smart, 33% for Jaylen Brown, 35% for Jason Tatum. Robert Williams didn't take any threes, and 33% for Al Horford. Now, if you go back and look at their ranks, they're ranked top 10, top five in pretty much every category of frequency and efficiency when it comes to three-pointers, but their guys aren't shooting. They're not great shooters. And you look at the Rockets shooting with Fred coming into this year, and this is assuming no changes. I'm assuming they're going to get better at this. 34% from Fred, 33% from Jalen, 32% for Dylan, 30% for Jabari, and 33% for Al P. You look at the averages between the two teams. We pretty much shot the same percentages as the Celtics. What's the difference between the Rockets three-pointers and the Celtics three-pointers was the quality of those shots, the context of those shots, the timeliness of those shots, and where those shots were coming from and who was taking those shots, right? And what type of shots. So if you really drill down to the type of shots that the Celtics really, really thrive on was those catch and shoot threes, those spot up threes. That's where they made their money. And they did sometimes get into isolation, taking tough shots. But when they really beat teams, especially in the second half of the season, their catch and shoot numbers just went up. So that's how you can get a team that's not really a great shooting team like the Celtics to be one of the most efficient teams in the NBA in shooting. And that's what I'm assuming, and I'm hoping that the Rockets are going to be able to pull off this coming season, is that even though we don't have great shooters, the shot selection, the shot types is naturally going to make them incredibly efficient. Now, on the back end for the Celtics, the bench, they had some decent shooters coming off the bench. That also assisted in them in their efficiency stats as a team. But a majority of their minutes were played by non-shooters. These are guys that can't shoot. But they hit their shots when they matter. They hit their shots when they're supposed to, whether they're open threes, catch and shoot threes, they hit those shots. So for the Rockets, limiting the bad shots, increasing the high efficiency, great shots, and do it in high volume. So you're looking at, for example, Jason Tatum hitting 35%. I think he took about 8 threes a game. A lot of his threes were spot ups and catch and shoots. Compared to Jalen Green, who's shooting 33%, shooting a bunch of tough threes, guarded threes, threes, pull-up threes, all these threes that are contested. So not all percentages are equal, especially given the quality of the shot. So that's something you're going to be looking for this year. Offensive philosophy, the play types are going to be totally different. Even this first game with Indiana coming up in the preseason, just watch how their five-out spacing looks. It's going to be different. When they had Time Lord on the court with Boston, he would play in that dunker spot and come and set screens, run their typical pick and roll. And then when they had Al Horford, he was five out. And you're going to see that with Al P is going to be five out, because not only even with the shooting, he can pass. So that opens up a new dimension of spacing for the Rockets. So it's going to be interesting to see how they use him. But keep an eye on that, on the spacing, the philosophies, that five out. What roles are guys playing? Jabari, his positioning, Dylan, what is Dylan's role going to be? This is all going to be very interesting going into this year. So defensively, this has to be, you know, it's going to be top of the ranks when it comes to just basketball X's and O's as far as what the Rockets need to do. You really look at, you know, just how much of our defense was really based on just terrible team defense. It's terrible, you know, across the board. And I know people try to harp on individual players and this guy needs to do this and this guy, but it is across the board. But there is something that I think is going to be very, very important. And this kind of came up during camp as far as with Alper Şengün and his role on defense, because everybody assumes that's where, you know, you're going to have the biggest struggles. Personally, I think everybody across the board, Jalen especially, is going to be really tested on that side of the court, especially in the context of a team. If the Rockets are going to do what Coach Udoka said, and he alluded to that switching, and I think they're going to switch a lot early and build upon switching as the months of the season go along, to where they can do some different things, give you different looks, play different schemes out of the switch. But switching a lot, switching is a weakness for Jalen. And it's going to be a weakness to start for Alpi. And I think I'm going to say to start, because I think that this is something he's going to pick up on. Coach already said it. Physically, there's no reason Alper Şengün shouldn't be a great defender, right? Because he has all the physical tools. Sneaky athlete, right? We already know he can jump. You know, he doesn't have the quickest feet in the world, but it's really not about your foot quickness when it comes down to defense and the team concept. Even with switching, it's about team positioning. Can you position yourself to be in place to either siphon the offensive player to the help, or just cut them off from where they're trying to go to? And I think he's shown he can do that. It's just a matter of locking in on that side of the ball. What I found interesting, and this is where the switching is really going to be able to show for the Rockets, is that when you look at the Celtic centers from the year Ime was there, their percentage of them playing in isolation was really, really high compared to other centers. That's because they switch a lot. And when they switch, you're going to be on an island. And a lot of times that's where they left their big men on an island and just forced those teams to take contested jumpers. And can you do that? Can you make a guy take a contested jumper? You see Al Horford in that year, 245 possessions in isolation. That's 18% of his defensive play ties were in isolation. Elite, 84th percentile in isolation. You have Robert Williams, who was more of their drop big. And like I said, Rob was, and they played a lot together on the court at the same time. And they used Rob to kind of, they would either hide him in the corner or put him on somewhere else and use Al kind of as the main screen defender there, the big in the screen defender, because he was a little more versatile. But you would have Robert Williams, 40th percentile, 146 possessions in isolation, 14.8% of his play types. And then you look at Alper Şengün last year under Steven Silas, only 50 possessions in isolation defense, because we played a drop, no matter what. It didn't matter if it was Dame, Steph, LeBron, they would drop. And this is kind of the stuff Ime Udoka pointed out when he was talking about in training camp, about not just sitting in a drop all day, because that's one dimensional. The defense is just too one dimensional. Offenses are too creative. They're too good. Guys in the NBA are too cold to see a drop and not abuse it. So that was malpractice in itself. And you just have to throw guys out there. Zach Lowe pointed it out. This is the year you want to see Alper Şengün sink or swim on defense. Let's figure out if he's the guy that we need to pay. Because guess what? You got to pay them. You got to pay Jalen and him. You got to start having these conversations this season about who's the guy you're going to keep, who's going to get traded, who's going to get paid. So you can see 50 possessions, 4.7% of his play type were in isolation, and he ranked middle of the pack, right? To me, not enough frequency to really know. For my eye test, Alpi was a decent isolation defender, right? He was, I think he held players in the mid-range, but I think in the either low 40s or high 30% on field goals. Where he struggles at, that Al and Robert didn't struggle at, was at the rim. Excellent defender, Al Horford at the rim, ranked in the 90-something percentile. Robert Williams, same thing, excellent defender at the rim, per synergy. And for Alper Şengün, he was poor. So that's going to be a little bit interesting. I'm trying to see what way are they going to mitigate some of that rim protection. Is it going to be by committee? Is it going to be by focusing on the perimeter, positioning? All of that is there. I think physically, Alpi should be a better rim defender. It's just being committed to the defensive side of the court, and I think that's going to be the challenge for him. He needs to live up to that challenge, or I think Udoka is not going to be hesitant to put somebody in. right? Like I said, I'm going to quote it again. If you don't play defense, you're not going to play for Ime Udoka. So the challenge for all of them is going to be there. But I think especially for Alper Şengün, because we already know what else he brings to the table. If he can be average, even just neutral at that side of the court, which I think he can, then he is going to be special. Because when we talk about the offense, I didn't really delve into Alper because I feel like I've given you guys a lot on that. But there's so much in his game that lends to this style of offense that they're going to run that's going to be incredible. But watch out for that, how they use Alper. Is he going to be switching? And when he does switch, how does he fare? Are guys blowing by him? Or is he able to hold his own? He looked good in training camp. Can that translate over to the regular season? You can see that as early as day one. And just to throw in a little extra for y'all, that matchup with if they do play Miles Turner, that's going to be big for him because Miles gives him fits. Because Miles can space, Miles can attack, Miles is big, he's athletic. So I want to see that matchup because that's going to be interesting to see. And then with Buddy and some of that stuff, they're going to try to run a lot of screen actions. Those screens with Buddy Hield and some of the guards that they have over there in Indiana that they were exploiting last year when we played them in those two games. Miles really slipped a lot backdoor because Alper would try to play a hard edge, or he would try to step up on the screens and give a little bit of resistance, a little bit of showing to Buddy Hield or whoever the shooter was coming off. Turner would just slip it and go to the basket and get an open dunk. They have to fix it. I'm sure Udoka's watched that film and they have something in mind. So that's going to be interesting for the first half, however long he plays. Watch that. Just keep an eye on that for me. And last but not least, you know, for this year, for this season coming up, I think the most important thing that's going to determine the success of this team is going to be guys buying into their roles. And this is across the board. And we have a team full of a bunch of players that have something to prove that could be good and that could be bad. It could go both ways. It could be a gift or a curse. And I think to me, the number one player that really has a lot to prove this year is going to be Jalen Green. Because he is right at the cusp of becoming either where he's going to step into that star role that he's been groomed for, or he's going to be viewed as somebody that's just a talented player that, you know, he can score and that's it. Can Jalen buy into his role as somebody that is not the primary offensive focus, but is going to be important going down the stretch? Because I think the quicker he buys into that role and the identity on this team, the better it is going to be for the team and for him individually. I think for him, there's going to be a culture shock and a change in what he's used to. His whole life, he's been fed the ball. He's been given, well, except his rookie year, he's been given like the status of the number one offensive option, if not number two. He's still going to be the one or two offensive option this year, but the way it's going to be given to him is going to be different because he has to find it within the flow of the game. There's not going to be a lot of forced, just things that he would have to play out of character for him to just be aggressive like that. Now, like I said, when it's closing time, there's a mismatch that they find, they're going to give him the ball in those situations. But generally in the free flow of the offense and the natural progression of the game, everybody's going to have an opportunity to score. Everybody's going to have an opportunity to impact the game. And he's going to have to show beyond a reasonable doubt that he's at the level in isolation that he should be the first person the ball touches before the play even starts, like a Jason Tatum. To get to that level, he's going to have to show it at the highest moment. I don't think he's there yet. But for him, the progression towards that is, can you put your ego aside? And I'm not even saying he has an ego, but can you put your ego aside to say that it doesn't matter how many shots I get in this game or in this quarter, it's a matter of, can we win? And he's saying all the right things towards this. And honestly, even for Jalen, you can tell even some of the games where he was having great offensive halves, whether he liked it or not, they've shut him out. I'm talking about the Rockets, whether it was Kevin Porter, whether it was, you know, not really Jabari, but whether it's just the coaches not emphasizing getting him the ball. When you have a team full of young guys, everybody thinks they're the guy. Everybody thinks they're him. So Can he buy into that role? Because everybody has to do what I'm just saying. I think Jabari's going to buy in fairly easily because his game is so adaptable. I think Tari's going to buy in because Tari was a bench player. I think Fred is a vet and he's going to do what he has to do to win. I think Dylan is going to buy into his role because he's a vet and he's been there, done that. I think some of these guys, I think Alperen Şengün, it is a question, but I think he's been a secondary player for so long, it's not going to be foreign to him. I think the biggest change in style of play for everybody, for all the players, is going to be in Jalen Green, because it's a new offense. He's not going to be on ball running a million pick and rolls. It's going to be him making decisions off ball, on ball. He's going to have to space the floor. He's going to shoot. He's going to cut. This is going to be a lot for him to be able to take in. I honestly believe he's going to struggle to start, but that should not be alarming. The struggle is normal. The whole Celtics team struggled when they had to make this this adaptation to playing style that Ime really focuses on movement, passing, and getting teammates involved. Once Jalen picks that up, the faster he does, it's going to take his game to the next level because he's going to know his spots. Where does he make his bread and butter at? Is it going to be off ball? Is it going to be on ball? There's going to be actions for him to be able to exploit all advantages. I've heard some people kind of say they're worried about what he's going to look like in this. If he buys in, he becomes a superstar. Because there's one thing to have an advantage as a high speed, I can get downhill, get to the paint at will. But when you diversify your offense where you can get to the paint at will, I can come off the screen and shoot it. I can shoot it off ball in the corner. I can be in a slot. I can get in my mid-range bag. You got to account for me wherever I am on the court. It warps the defense. And I want Jalen to warp the defense that any movement he makes, they have to shift towards him. And I think that's what Coach Udoka is trying to get out of him. And I think that that's what he's trying to do. It's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy, but I definitely believe he can do it. So those are my top five things the Rockets have to do, have to focus on. These are the top five things, the top five reasons we're going to have a successful season this year. You guys let me know your top five in the comments or in the chat. Appreciate y'all. If you stay to hear this video or hear this podcast this long, hit the like button. And if you're new to the channel, subscribe. The Chop Shop, we're about to take off this year. We got great things coming up. Obviously, the Rockets are going to be exciting. We're partnering with the with BBTV and the NBA Playmakers. So they got some exciting stuff coming up. We'll be doing some stuff with the NBA as far as the different events that are going to go going on throughout the year. So it's a lot of exciting things. Y'all keep rocking with us. This year is going to be the year. It's going to be different, man. Y'all have been with us through the lows. Now let's get it through the highs. The quality of the content is not going to stop going up.
Keep paying attention to what we're doing. We're adding a little bit every day, but you guys are doing a great job. I'm in. What you got, man? I'm on three. One, two, three.